How did our education system get to this point? Let's take a look at the origins of compulsory schooling, all the way back to ancient Greece.
Plato was the first to write and theorize about the concept of state-supported schooling as a means to create the ideal citizenry. He saw two purposes for compulsory state education: to create one standard of justice, and to filter young people into their assigned social classes and occupations. Though a compulsory system was never put in place in ancient Greece, his ideas gained popularity and stood the test of time. The first secular national education system that would be compulsory for all children was established in 1806 by Johann Fichte in the highly militarized country of Prussia. In his address to the German nation, Fichte declared that education should provide the means to destroy free will, and that through forced education, Prussian children would learn their disciplined, predetermined role in society from an early age. This centralized schooling, or universal conditioning, would deliver obedient soldiers to the army, obedient workers for mines, factories, and farms, well-subordinated civil servants and clerks for industry, and citizens to society who were uniform in word, thought, and deed. Plato would have loved it. Early in Prussia's compulsory school movement, Americans visited the country and, liking what they saw, made plans to Germanize America, starting with poor urban neighborhoods. In 1844, Horace Mann, an education official from Massachusetts, brought a compulsory education proposal to the Boston School Committee, who passed it in 1852 as the first law of its kind in the U.S. The forced school idea caught on quick, and every state in the country passed similar laws over the following years. With a great number of immigrants relocating to the United States, compulsory schooling would serve as a means to assimilate people into the American way of life, forcing them to leave their cultures on the shores.
According to Vernon, it was their intention
to further the myth of gender, of class, of race, and to get those all instituted in everyone, and so that they believe it. Because if they didn't, then, you know, this whole society would just crumble.
According to Matt Hearn from the Purple Thistle Center in Vancouver, British Columbia, part of the story that was told to Americans and immigrants alike was that institutions like factories and public schools were places where the ground was level and everyone had an equal chance for success.
And then the idea became popular that schools would be this huge kind of hopper, right? You'd throw everybody into them and it would be a meritocracy, right? Those people that deserved it would come out ahead, and those people that didn't would fall behind. It kind of congeals with American Revolution ideas about equality. And the idea being that if you're poor and you're rich, you throw you in school, well, one of you, you know, the one that's better than you will get ahead irregardless of your background.
But it wasn't only immigrants to this country who were indoctrinated into the American status quo. Indigenous people of this continent, who had been living and learning in community for centuries, were forced into churches, reservations, and boarding schools as part of a government policy to civilize native people and exterminate their culture and their lives. In 1879, a man named Captain Pratt took 84 children from a Sioux reservation in South Dakota to the first Indian boarding school in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The government-sponsored, but often church-run schools attempted to train indigenous children to be white, from their clothes and hair to their language and history. Nearly every indigenous tribe was subjected to this assimilation, though many people resisted. Throughout the century, coercive schooling found its place in the United States as the norm.
With the coming of the Industrial Revolution in the mid-1800s, the priorities and social roles for people changed rapidly to match technological and economic progress. As unions gathered strength in opposition of big business, the Senate and the Bureau of Education published statements that despite its commitment to prepare children for their roles in society, education was giving workers too much power in the workplace and causing too much discontent and awareness of poor conditions. With big money like Carnegie and Rockefeller behind them, a series of changes were made to public schools in the early 1900s. critical thinking classes like philosophy that bring up questions about economics, politics, and religion were replaced with humanities and social studies. A bell system was put in place, recreating a controlled factory setting.
Schools separated students into levels, or tracks, to replicate the factory as well. They used the concept of social Darwinism, which is the idea that people who succeed in life are just naturally stronger, not more wealthy or privileged.
The children of the working class were generally kept in rudimentary and vocational classes, while upper-class children received more educational resources. Immigrant children and other children of color were given the fewest resources. The school day and school year were extended, and students had less time to pursue their own interests and skills.
With parents busy at work in the factories, schools took the place of family. Matt, organizer, Purple Thistle Center.
It's industrial society, right? Parents had to go, left working community, had to go work in big factories and big industrial economy, and therefore needed another similarly designed industrial facility for kids to go spend a day. If you look at the rise of industrial culture, it mirrors exactly the rise, of course, of industrial schooling. So they rise one beside the other. So when there used to be a economy of small workplaces and people largely working at home and working in the community, and kids could just kind of run around and be part of it.
By 1930, public school had almost completely squeezed out parent involvement, looking to administrators, school boards, and state and national standards for how to run and what to teach in schools. While public schools have made many adjustments over the last 80 years in content, teaching and testing methods, and schools vary greatly depending on location and demographics, the structure of schooling we have today is much the same as it was in the 1930s. Andy, founder of Puget Sound Community School, illuminates a clear line from the factories of the Industrial Revolution to many of today's schools, especially those populated by working-class or low-income students.
It's the old industrial, post-industrial argument. They were built at a time and are modeled after this idea of an assembly line that is antiquated. And kids in their heart of hearts know that. They don't understand necessarily that, but they know that they're in something that is not up to date. And it's, if you go and you're moving from period to period, from year to year, that you are simply a cog that is having the next thing added to it each year. Because when you're five, you're supposed to know this, and we're going to teach it to you, and we're the experts. And so here you are, the car on the assembly line, and we're adding the door now. And you move now to the next spot that adds the seat, or whatever it is. That the car has no intelligence, it's just the thing that's moving along while the experts add to it. Okay, so that's the model that is still going on in schools. That's not happening anymore, and so kids know that. So how do you create a post-industrial model of public education that turns everything on its head and requires people to actually trust that the kids can do something?
Bowen, Albany Free School.
There's no change in the approach. If anything, the approach is getting more kind of structured and controlling, and I think that it's clearly not working, but it continues to be that way, and I think that's the issue. That's the problem with systems that exist on the level that the educational system exists, which is not based on actual kids making any decisions or teachers actually even having any input, but sort of bureaucracy and hierarchy passing down